We're doing Mishlei, we're up to what they call the 9th chapter, the 11th Pasuk. And the Torah tells us, Kivi yirbu yamehecha, because through me you will have longevity as you learn wisdom and know wisdom that will grant you longevity. V'yosifu lecha shinot chayim. And if you have longevity, so then you have the capacity to do more good. If you do more good, then you have more years of life. And over here, the words shnot chayim, so there are two interpretations. Rashi says, what is shnot chayim? Years of life is years where you can make a living, years where you could live in wealth, where things are comfortable. Mike, you like that pshat, right?
What?
That's years of life. Shnot chayim, years of life.
Yeah.
Rashi says, what's called years of life? Years where you make a living, years where you live in wealth. If you apply the intellect that Hashem granted you, so then, through that, you should be able to have years where you prosper. The other commentaries learn that Shnot chayim is not talking about this world. It's talking about years of life in the world to come. If through his wisdom one has a longer life, he can avoid dangerous circumstances, so he could live longer, and then Yosif Ulecha Shenot Chayim, through living longer and having more time to do mitzvot and do good deeds, so then he will have more life, and life, according to that understanding, is in the world to come. Shlomo HaMelech says, Im chachamta, chachamta lach, velatzta levadecha tisa. If you've been smart, so then you should know you have benefited. It's your own gain. And if you've mocked things, so then at the end of the day, you're the one that's going to carry the brunt of the weight. And this is easily seen with people who are going to classes, people who are in school, those who work diligently. At the end of the day, they're the ones who know the material and they use it in their life. Those that joke around, at the end of the day, they themselves carry the weight. Throughout the year, you think, it's fun, I'm joking around, I'm this, I'm that. At the end of the day, the person himself is the one that reaps the rewards or pays the price for the attitude that he had. And this is a message that children have to hear repeatedly. And very often we have to remind ourselves. Children very often think they're doing their parents a favor. You want me to get good grades. You want me to go to school. No, it's in your interest. Im chachamta chachamta lach. If you become smart, you're the one who benefits most from it. If you're going to joke around, ultimately you're the one that's going to pay the price. So that's for children. But the truth is that we're also that way. Very often people have to be reminded that the one who benefits most from learning Torah, from getting smarter, is the person himself. We live our lives thinking we're doing God a favor. No. Shlomo HaMelech says, remember, the first person who benefits if you become smart is you yourself. Eshet kisilut homia pitayut uval yade ama. Shlomo HaMelech, this is Proverbs, so he's talking about the woman, which is a metaphor. Eshet kisilut, the woman of foolishness, and again, this is a seductive woman, and he's talking about, he's going to play out now a long metaphor. And in this metaphor, a metaphor is without the use of like or as, or is without, right? There's a metaphor and a simile. A simile is with like or as. So Shlomo HaMelech is using a metaphor. He's saying, the woman of foolishness, and this is a metaphor for foolishness, is homia, she makes her voice heard. Pitayut, she utters little nonsenses. She says nonsensical things. Oh, it's so nice. Oh, it's so sweet. Oh, it's so good. Uvaliyada amah. And you see from her speech that she's what they colloquially they call a dumb blonde. That's what they call it. So there's this attraction to someone who is less intelligent and could easily be seduced. And that's Shlomo Amelch's metaphor. Eshet kesilut. I have blonde children. I have a blonde daughter. I don't go for this. But at any rate, the metaphor for foolishness is a woman who is sitting there and just making her voice heard foolishly, and it's as though she doesn't really know too much. V'yasheva lefetach beita. She sits at the entrance to her house. She isn't modest. No, she's outside. Al kisei merome karet. And she sits there at the height of the city because she's not even intelligent enough to know that she doesn't know anything. So she's not embarrassed to talk. You've probably seen people like that. So she goes there to the highest place in the city. She calls out the people who are passing by. There are people who are ovrei darech. They're passing. They're going on the path of Hashem. But she is going to try and seduce them. Hamiyashirim orichotam. They're trying to keep their path straight. But, no. She is going to seduce them. And what's she going to do? She looks at them. They're trying to stay on the steady path. And she calls them, Mifeti yasuheina. Who among you is seductive? Who among you is going to come here? V'chasar lev ve'amer alo. Who is it that doesn't have the heart who to hold himself back? Come here, I want to tell you. Yeah.
I had a rabbi who would say the following about this kind of person, that the Yetzer Hara, and that kind of person is so strong, it's done with them. It's taken them over. It's moved on to working through them to take over other people. So the Yetzer Hara is like, I've already done my work on you. Let's work together to get someone else now. It's like, it's a completely different level.
So, but this is all a metaphor. The idea here is you have people, you have the soul that's trying to keep the person on track, and then you have life, which is all around trying to attract a person and get a person to think that, hey, that looks interesting, that looks nice, let me spend my time or my money or my efforts in that. And the wording of this woman, which is supposed to represent foolishness, is who is the one who is a peti? Peti is one who's willing to be seduced. He's willing to believe whatever you tell him. So very often we want to be gullible. It's nice to think that what we're being told is true. Take the classical case. A person goes on an affair. Does he really think it's going to last and he's not going to get caught? At some point he's going to get caught. So he might get away with it for 1 year or 2 years. A guy decides to be a thief. A guy decides he's going to rob from his boss. A guy decides he's going to cheat on taxes. Whenever we have temptation, what we're really doing is we're giving in to that petty in us. Every one of us has that part of us that wants to be gullible. So we want to believe we're going to get away with it. Who's going to catch me? Who's going to know? What's the difference? If we'd stop and think, if we wouldn't be a petty, then we'd say, is it really worth it? Do I really want to spend my time fighting the IRS? It'll be in 2 years and 3 years. Who says I'm going to have a head for it? Is what? Oh, okay. I don't know if that's such a good example, because he got away with it for many years. I don't know if he knew, let's say, how many more years does he have to live? I don't know, 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah,
logically.
So,
what?
But he lost his soul.
Yeah, okay.
He didn't really get away with it,
because
he was worried all the time.
Okay. Okay. I don't know. I feel like whatever they do to him isn't enough. So I have a hard time, you know. He ruined so many people's lives. I have a hard time with him. What?
Were you affected by the person in any way? Or?
No, but, you know, there were whole organizations that did chesed that were shut down because of him. Yeah, so that's, you know, that I take that personally. Yeah. Mike?
I was going to say that it could have been, you never know what good could come from it. There might have been some, like, future dictatorship or terrorist organization that had invested their money.
Could be? Could be? It's nice to see the light and everything.
Very good.
Later on, I'll answer you. no, there's. You're not the first to make that claim. Before Rashi's time, there were two poets, two linguists, Dunash ben Labrat and Menachem ben Saruk. And I have to remember to bring you the story of a certain argument and that evolved to the point of blows that went between them. But that's not for now. Right, so you want to say that...
what I'm saying is you never know what will be the effect. You try and do something
okay.
Really bad, turn out really bad, and then you might do something really bad, and you might do something good.
Right. So what you're saying is the road to Eden is paved with bad intentions. That's what you're saying. Could be. Yeah, I guess it could be, yeah. Never know. Ki mishoresh nachash yesei tsefa. The pasuk says, when you have the root of a snake, you usually get a serpent. You're not going to get something else coming out of it. So yeah, theoretically, but could be. Maim genuvim yimtaku velechem sitarim yinam. So the woman tells them, you know, stolen water is sweeter, and bread that you've stolen, that's going to be much tastier than bread that's not stolen. And what she's telling them is, you know, you have your wives, but they're not going to be as sweet as coming with me because I'm prohibited. You know, you're going to be naughty, so then it's going to be sweeter. So this pasuk, now this whole metaphor is the Rambam's example. The Rambam in his introduction to Morah Nevuchim, the Rambam says you have some metaphors that you can't break down. They're giving you one general theme, one general idea, and you can't stop and look at every verse and say, okay, what's this alluding to? They're giving you one story, they're developing the story with details, but the details aren't there to really teach you anything. The Rambam says some metaphors in Mishlei and in Tanakh, every word and every aspect of the metaphor teaches something else, and sometimes it's just a long story with one idea. The details are there to embellish the story, but at the end of the day, the story is there to give you one message. And the Rambam quotes this. He quotes all of these verses. He quotes this. No, and I think he quotes a story. I don't remember if we saw it or we're about to see it. With another seductive woman who grabs the guy by his lapel. Did we see that yet? I don't remember. It's around here. Heze panea nashkalo. Okay, either we saw it or we will see it. I don't remember. It's somewhere around here. Malvadim Ravati Alsi. Yeah, we did it. It was in Perek Zayin. Okay, so we did that, but it's the same idea. But this pasuk has applications. Maim Ginuvim Imtaku, Chazal tell us that this is a real concept. It's true that forbidden fruits are sweeter. Maim ginuvim yimtaku, stolen water is sweeter. There is a certain aspect where you get more joy out of something that, so to speak, you've beaten the system, you've taken something that's not yours. The Gemara does say that. She's trying to seduce him with these lines. V'lo yada ki refa'im sham bim kei she'ol ki ru'eha. And the guy who's getting seduced, he doesn't stop to think that where she's taking him is really, she's taking him to the grave. She's killing him. It's like the guy who sits down for a big salami sandwich with mayonnaise rich and fat, and the guy weighs 400 pounds, 500 pounds to begin with, and he's eating that sandwich, and he's slobbering over it, and he's going, this is life. And the guy sitting next to him looks at him and says, no, that's death, that's death, that's not life. Okay, but we all have that, where the thing that's seducing us keeps telling us, this is sweet, this is good for you. And the truth is that, no, it's not. And it applies to many things in life. I wouldn't touch smoking, just because I'm scared of Mike. But I would talk about smoking, but I'm scared of... but there are things in life that attract us, and we have to think about where they're going. And again, you'll notice that Shlomo says the one who gets seduced is a peti. He's one who would like to believe what he's told. And that's the gullibility that we apply, where we all have that part of us that's very gullible, and then we let ourselves believe, no, this is okay, this is good, I'm just having this one. You know the guy who's on a diet and he goes to the fridge and he takes just one spoon of ice cream, one little spoon isn't going to make one, it's too big of a difference. So what's wrong with another little spoon? And by the time he's finished his 10th spoon, he says to himself, well, by now I killed my diet anyways for tonight, so I could have the whole tub. And then he finishes the tub and he says, but I'm hungry and my wife left me cake in the fridge and there's so much temptation. And if I've already eaten the ice cream, so why don't I have the cake? Petty. We all have that within us and we all have those times. How many times does a person sit on the internet and he's there at 1 o'clock in the morning and he looks at the clock and he says another 5 minutes and an hour later it's 2 o'clock and he says, okay, but I'm in the middle of this article, another 5 minutes and it's 3 o'clock and then he says, well, 3 o'clock, I might as well go down the Basikin, so now it's Lashem Shemayim, he stays up for another hour. So, okay. We all have that gullible part of us where we want to believe. It could be the guy in the middle of Seder that goes out just to answer that cell phone and just to do that one thing, and before he knows it, his whole Seder is gone because he did just this and just that and just the other thing. And we know if we'd stop and be serious about life, then we'd catch ourselves and say, hey, wait a second, I'm wasting my time away. If I go to sleep late, I'm going to pay the price tomorrow. But we don't think that way. We think about, I feel vibrant now. I'm sure I'm going to get up on time tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll get up. I'll take a nap, but I'll get up. Okay. That's the peti. So Shlomo HaMelech says it's really foolishness. He gave a metaphor for a woman that's seductive, but it's really foolishness that's attracting us and our capacity to be gullible, that we allow ourselves to be taken in. And then there's also that aspect of Maim Knuvim Yimtaku. It does taste sweet to do what's wrong. There is a certain sweetness to knowing I know I shouldn't. Right? You guys, yeah.
But at the same time, you feel like that's not the whole pleasure is not there because you know you might be caught, you'll be caught, but you don't know when. But you know that's not legal. So you know that there is like this kind of good taste that you cannot experience at the wholeness, right?
Yeah.
If you worry about all these things like temptation, like too much, you're going to be so conscientious, you're going to be stressed and ill.
Right. Right, you for sure shouldn't worry too much. That's for sure true, right? Mishle is training us to be balanced, not too much, right? Right. But the question is, what is moderation? You know, Saddam Hussein also thought he was moderate. He only dumped certain people in his acid bath. Only certain people. He was very moderate. Gaddafi also thought he was moderate. You know, and go look at Assad. He also says he's moderate. It's these crazy people who are attacking him. And you know what? Gaddafi was right. Gaddafi warned that it was Al-Qaeda that was attacking him. Somehow 20,000 air-to-surface missiles are gone. Shoo, I don't know what the United States is going to do about all their airplanes. All their passenger planes. 20,000. Wow. Gaddafi said all along, he said, NATO's fighting me, but they're fighting on the side of Al-Qaeda. He warned. No one listened. So maybe he was moderate. I guess you're right. Moderation, yeah. The question is, what's called moderation? We all agree to moderation. Don't you know, everyone says, I'm the moderate, everyone else is extreme. Hussein said it, Assad said it, Gaddafi said it. I have friends in Meir Shearim. They say they're moderate too.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? Saying,
you know what we said last year about those people.
I can't believe I would have said anything less than positive, but we'll talk about it in a minute. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've partly answered to Mike's question as well, but I thought about when you said about that whole thing of like, oh, another 5 minutes and then it's 2 o'clock, another 5 minutes. I'm one of those people, so I found a solution to the whole problem. I think this kind of answers Mike's thing about moderation and everything, which is that, like, I'm prepared to make that mistake a number of times in order to find the moderation. So what I do is I try and find where the tipping point is that I go beyond that point and I know there's no turning back kind of thing. So if I know that it's, I'll read one more article and then I'll go to sleep and then I know that turns into another article. So the next time I reach that point, the next night, I make a conscious decision that no, I'm not going to read this next article because I know that that leads to me staying up another hour. Now I go to sleep. And then maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. If it doesn't work, then the next night I take even one step further. Before I go to that other article, whatever it was, that leads me to the next article that leads me to staying up all night, you know what I mean? I become more extreme until I find the point that I'm not tipping over the edge.
So I'll tell you, I try not to open the internet at night. I try not to, you know, I deal with whatever emails I have to, but when I get home, I try not to open the internet. I try to put on my pajamas as early as possible, because somehow when you're not in pajamas, then there's that feeling, I'm not ready to go to bed yet, I'm still doing things. If you're in pajamas and the bed is just a question, right? So I try, if I have to open the internet, I'll put on pajamas, I'll brush my teeth, I'll be ready for bed. And then psychologically, I'm already half there. Yeah. I'm less attracted to the internet. That's one thing, which doesn't work too well. Sometimes I'm up then. Sometimes I start my day then. On an average night, I'm not in bed before 2. But if I turn on the internet, it's usually at 2 or 3. It's not. That's usually when I fail. There are things like your email where I can't, I couldn't go to sleep without answering your email. I also think it's important for a person to have moments where he stops and is upset at himself. Meaning, if we just let it ride, so then we have the next morning's frustration. And I think it's important when you stop and you tell yourself, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I can't believe I did this again. And then you don't go to bed. Then you stop and you think then and there, right. How did I get here?
Right, no, so you have to find what leads you to doing the next morning you think about it, not the same, but at night you can't think about it.
Like, I think both are important. I think it's important to have that frustrating moment together with the time that you had that quote-unquote pleasure or lazy or gullibility or foolishness where you tell yourself, what did I gain and what did I lose and what price am I going to pay? And then, because I don't know it's by you, but by me, when I end up staying up too late, I don't have a time to eat breakfast the next morning or lunch. I'm running so fast to start thinking about regretting last night. I don't have the time for that. Doesn't happen. So I'd much rather catch it that night. That's
not necessarily up to in the morning, but early the next evening before you start the whole thing. You think, hang on, where did I fall last night? Okay, I'm not going to let myself reach that point. That I find really helps me.
Now,
Facebook or whatever, for me it's just like a 3-4 minute thing. Check what's going on, like, make a comment or whatever, post a photo album or whatever, close it down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also, I think people forget that whatever you're in the middle of reading, it's still going to be there tomorrow.
Right, that's a beautiful thought. And how much do you want to bet that 99% of the people, 99% of the time, will not take the time to open a computer and go to that tomorrow? It's only now because you're in the shvung, you're doing it. Go ask a person when he's not zoned out into the thing. They'll never go back. That's a very good point. Right, I did that. I did that years ago. I would bookmark the pages when I had to go to sleep. I never reopened those bookmarks. Because when you're sane enough and you're not focused, right? When you're focused, who has time to read that? You're not going to waste your time. It's because you're not focused. It's because you're letting yourself, we're letting ourselves be taken.
It's like people are watching a movie and they cannot stop in the middle of the movie to do anything. But if you really have to stop the movie, translate, they're never even going to go back to finish watching it. At least that's me. I mean, I was like, forget about it, man. Oh, you don't really care.
You were talking about extra being people being hungry at the extra. I think that depends also on the actions that people receive from others. You get a certain kind of response.
What do you mean?
Meaning, if people are treated like as if they were in third world, they don't have access to society as other people. It's not their fault, just because things are made that way. So probably you're gonna probably.